You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
In 2004, myself and my friends and comrades, Ching Yi Chen and Jay Dulani, and our friend Shami Ali Ajamil, I actually was on LiveJournal on my stupid nonprofit day job that I hated, that I didn't have to work that hard at. And I was bitching because the person who I had moved to Toronto in part to be with in 1997, who was this amazing, rad, queer person of color activist who had then become physically abusive to me, and I'd never been able to have a successful resolution. I didn't want to send them to jail. And the, like, let's have a healing circle and see if we can transform him thing that we tried to do didn't really work either. You know, it was, 6 years since our breakup, and I was like, oh, he's being asked to perform at the Mumia rally. Shit, I can't go there. And I was coming from a background of being a feminist of color, a queer feminist of color anti-violence organizer, and I was just kind of bitching about, God, I'm so frustrated with this situation, on LiveJournal, and Chingy and Delani were like, let's get together, let's do something, like, let's do a zine. We'd all had experiences, either personally, of dealing with intimate violence within what was supposed to be a progressive community where people did not know what to do, or it had a lot of people around us who'd had similar issues and conflicts. And we all were coming from a place where we were like, wow, you know, so many of us come to activism, we come to radical communities, sometimes from a place where the violence that we experience growing up, whether it's within our families and or racism, sexism, transphobia, oppression, is what politicized us. And we thought, oh, we're gonna go to the movement and it's gonna be safe. And then we realized that actually, you know, abusers are not just cops that are out in some upper middle class suburb. They are people that we love and respect. And that's really complicated. And that if we know the cops and courts don't work for our communities and are not an option for our communities, we have to figure something else out. And that's really hard work, and it is some of the most vital work that I see us doing. When we started, we were going to do a little Xerox zine, and we were just going to collect stories, because I knew that when I was reading the, like, Anne Jones, When Battered Women Kill, second wave feminist books in the library, I was like, there's nothing in here about what happens when your girlfriend is the director of the Rape Crisis Center and she's the one who's beating you up. And at our beginning place, we just wanted to do liberation by sharing stories. And I think that sharing stories is one of the best organizing tactics that I believe in. What we started out there, it didn't stay there. In 2004, Insight Women of Color Against Violence had just started organizing 4 years before, and they had put out a document in 2003 that just came from an ad hoc meeting of anybody who was interested that was like, let's get together and brainstorm about what community accountability can look like. And I remember reading that document. Some of you guys may have seen it. There were just like 500 different ideas, like everything from you could take pots and pans and go outside someone's house and bang on them, you know, when they're beating someone and make them stop, to, you know, let's go ahead and like sit with the person who's been violent every week for 3 years until they transform, and everything in between. I was personally really inspired by this when I saw it. I was like, at least there's something, we're figuring it out. I also had a lot of questions, having been someone who had a shitty healing circle experience, where I was like, I want to see how this works in practice. So what we also did when we started putting out the call for the zine was we called it, we want roadmaps to justice. You know, did you try something that didn't involve the state? Did it work? Did it completely self-destruct? Was it somewhere in the middle? We want to document what's going on. And we started slowly with so much organizing work, with so much support we had to offer to people getting stories. And, you know, myself, Chingy, Delani, and Shami Ali, I lived in Toronto. Chingy was in Boston. Delani was in New York. Sham was in North Carolina and then Philly. We did 4 years of freeconference.com. I started having to do shots of vodka at the end because I was like, what? It was very stressful. 4 years later, our little zine had become 108 pages single space, full sized. And we didn't wait around for a publisher. I knew, as someone who'd been an independent artist, that, you know, so many feminist presses that I had loved, I mean, Kitchen Table Press, Press Gang, like so many other presses had gone kaput. So we were like, let's just print this shit out and Xerox it. And we went to the Critical Resistance 10th Anniversary Conference. We went to the Femme Conference. We went all over just speaking and sharing stories and sharing examples. And thankfully, and like I have a lot of gratitude for this, South End Press, which is an incredible feminist of color-led independent press in Boston, was like, hey, do you have a publisher? And we were like, no. And they were like, okay, you want to expand that shit? And we were like, yeah. And The book is coming out in March, and you know, the struggle is long. It's 6 years of work. Like, it's more than 6 years of work. I do want to say, we all know that community accountability is not something that's just been happening for 10 years. Our communities have been figuring out this shit for a really long time, when as communities of color, we knew that we couldn't call the cops, right? And there's all this stuff that existed before colonialism that we don't know, but maybe we can grope towards, or maybe it was screwed up too, but we can figure out something else. We don't really have an alternative. I want to share a couple of stories that we've gathered, because I know a lot of people are always like, so what do you do? What do you do? This is really overwhelming. What if they have a gun? And I know for a lot of people who are out into prison abolition and believe in it, the big question is still, what do you do with rapists and batterers and people who assault? You know, what do you do? And I mean, I feel really grateful that I have a lot of hope about that there are things we're figuring out. My friend Morgan Basakis calls community accountability a story that's still being written, but I feel like we're writing it. So, I mean, a couple of examples I've shared. So in 2005, and trigger warning, I'm about to share something that won't be graphic, but that does depict an act of violence. So do what you need to do for your resilience strategies. 2005, Rashawn Brazil, 19-year-old queer black man in Brooklyn, is found brutally murdered and dismembered in central Brooklyn. Three or four other queer black men are found murdered in similar fashion immediately afterwards. The families involved go to, you know, they go to the police, they don't get anywhere. They go to Audre Lorde Project, which is an LGBT of color community center, and they say, we want your help in pressuring the cops, we want some sort of investigation, but we also actually feel like the cops are not the solution. Like, we know they don't care about our kids. So what can we do instead that will actually change our community so this doesn't happen again? ALP had known at that point that, like, they're an organization predominantly all of queer people of color, most of whom live in central Brooklyn. Everybody who was their membership was like, right, we walk home from the subway to our apartments and we're harassed. You know, we are leaving the club or we're outside the club, we're harassed, sometimes from people on the streets, sometimes from the police, sometimes we're all kinds of people, sometimes from our dates. ALP did what they called the Safer Neighborhoods campaign, where they went to bodegas and bars and coffee shops and restaurants in the neighborhood, and they were like, will you commit to being a safe place for queer and trans people who are fleeing violence without going to the police? We're going to teach you how to de-escalate. We know that if you're in the bodega, you might have a baseball bat already to deal with somebody who's trying to hold you up. You know that you're not really relying on the cops. They have a network of something like 45 different safe zones, and they're like, yeah, this is a way of building that movement ambulance, that alternative. It's also a way of being like, as queer people of color, we don't need to leave Bed-Stuy to go to the West Village. We need to stay in Bed-Stuy and transform Bed-Stuy to be a community of color that accepts queer and trans POC in all forms, right? That's less of like an intimate partner thing, but I find it really, really important and inspiring in terms of shifting the paradigm around violence. Some other things that we've looked at are Ubuntu, which is a really incredible queer black feminist organization in Durham, North Carolina. They initially came together after the Duke University rape case, where the Duke University lacrosse team sexually assaulted a bunch of women of color who were sex workers who they'd hired to like party, who they'd hired to work as a party. And there's a huge media backlash against the women, blaming the women. They organized incredible pro-sex worker, pro-survivor activism and organizing. They have a National Day of Truth-Telling, supporting sex workers of color and led by sex workers of color. They also started doing stuff on intimate violence in their communities. So one of their members is like, hey, that guy I've been dating for 10 years, yeah, he became a cop last year. He's also now hitting me and the kids. Even if I wanted to go to the cops, I can't because those were his homies. What do we do? They organized a schedule where they had membership that just were in her house 24/7. There was always somebody there. Because her thing was, I don't want to lose my house. I don't want to lose my kids. I don't want him to fuck with me. Just the presence of having two people there every hour, making tea, chilling with her, and letting it be known that, look, she's not leaving the house and we're not going to leave her alone. Plus, they worked with his mother, so his mother was like, look, I love you and you're my son, but if you want to still be my son, you need to stop hitting your wife. That was enough to maintain safety for her the way she wanted. There are a lot of other examples. I really encourage people to check out Creative Interventions, which is a similar storytelling project that's been collecting these stories and have them online. I'm also offering a workshop this Sunday on community accountability, which is almost full, like, but we can work it out. I don't know. But I feel really, really excited about the power of these stories as an organizing tool and as something that we can do to shift things. And I just want to see where we're at in 10 years and 15 years, because we are all we have, and we got to make this happen. And it's hard because it's much, in some ways, even though, you know, when you call the cops, usually it doesn't work, it's not on you. You know, you're like, oh, they fucked up. And if you and your friends try and get together and try and figure out what does stop violence, like what can we leverage to make people stop, and it doesn't work out or there are mistakes, it's really scary. But I mean, the stakes are high, but I feel like we all know that they are also the only stakes we have.